It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soze. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at...
FilmSociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you just heard is the head coach of the Zazu football team.
Yep.
I'm sorry, fantasy football team.
Fantasy football.
That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
And it's that time of year. We'll get to our guests in a minute. I'll get to you, Chris. I'm going to get to you.
It is that time of year.
That nobody really cares about except maybe two people in this building.
The fantasy football season starts when Zazu play the All-Stars. Everybody knows this.
We have a fantasy football league here. I love when we start the film show off with non-film material.
We do that quite
often.
Regularly.
You know what? I'm checking in with each other, with everybody. So anyway, we have a fantasy league, and this week it is the week that my team, the Tommy Wiseau All-Stars, faces your scrappy young team, Zazu, and we call it the Silver Stakes game. And now, annual Silver Stakes game, because there's no such thing as first annual. And the winner of the Silver Stakes game gets a raw steak.
Yep.
From the loser.
Last year,
I'm sorry, second winner. Sorry.
Last year you.
Last year I won, and it tasted delicious.
Yes, on I think it was Monday. I presented you with a steak.
There's audio.
It would have been a Tuesday.
There's video somewhere. It's
yes.
Very funny.
Yep.
So anyway, second annual. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Why a raw steak? Why not a cooked one?
Well, it'd be hard to eat at work. Plus, I like to prepare it personally myself. I think I used a Cajun rub and grilled it in butter. Yeah, I did.
Also, you said free steak.
Free steak always tastes better than bought steak.
Yeah.
It always does. All right. So,
no matter who's cooking.
No matter who's cooking. Especially, however, it's even better when I'm cooking. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. This is the, I think, fifth time I've seen Chris Lloyd this week, and it's going to be that way, I think, between now and the end of the year.
It's a great time of year.
It is a great time of year. Although we...
Some might say it's the most wonderful time of year.
Don't you ever, ever sing that.
Sing it like Andy Lynn.
He's dead, so you're going to have to. But yeah, it's grown-up movie season. We are in the thick of grown-up movies now. Thank goodness. We're very, very excited about that. But yeah, we've been seeing... I got to... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 films this week.
Wow, that's impressive.
It happens. And then... And then you were at how many this week?
Just a scant 3, although I think I already saw a couple.
You did. You were already ahead of the game on a couple of those.
So we're way ahead of movies that we legally can't talk about yet.
Although if you read Chris's posting on Facebook this week, it was a little obvious.
I cheat a little on the social media thing.
Yeah, I don't see the sharpshooters with MGM logos on them, so we're okay out of this. Actually, but before we start, how was everybody's Halloween? Did you have a good Halloween?
Good. The weather was stinky for us yard haunters.
You really dig Halloween.
Oh yeah, go to my I have a YouTube channel, Christopher Lloyd. Go check it out. I put up Halloween videos every year, so I've got this year's up already.
So you're the guy who jumps out of the bushes and scares kids?
No, but I set up all sorts of stuff. I have lots of animatronics and props and the whole thing.
It's like Jigsaw over there.
Just about, yeah.
Or should I say, When will you ever go as Paul Bettany?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I do Halloween. I had officially one crier this year.
Oh, you made a child cry. Do you feel better?
In my defense, though, it was a little baby that the mother was holding, and she set something off that jumped at her that made her scream, so that made the baby scream.
It's still your fault.
It's still my fault.
And Kobe, you do not have children that come through your building. However,
no.
You made something very special.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Indeed.
Because we also talk about food on the film show whenever
that's
possible.
That's what we do. So Wednesday... Or no, was it Tuesday? When was Halloween?
Wednesday. Yes.
Holy cow.
Those of us who have children know exactly what day it is. Go on.
Anyway, so Wednesday, we're here at the station, and I'm moseying around, making my rounds as I usually do, and 10 o'clock rolls around. You give me a call. Tell what...
are we really going to reveal how this happens?
Inside. It's behind the scenes.
Oh, we are behind
That's
the scenes?
That's what you get here at Film Sociology.
We are...
Behind the scenes look...
At how we do things.
At your yes.
At your Not at your pledge dollars at work. but Mr. Slagle and I are fans of one TV chef named Claire Robinson, visually stunning Claire Robinson.
Usually.
With a show 5-ingredient fix.
Yep, I'll get a call around 10 o'clock. Hey, Kobe, she's making fill in the blank. All right, cool. Be over in a second.
And you did. And,
came over. She was making, it was a chocolate episode.
Truffles. Yeah.
Truffles.
For
yes.
Halloween.
And I was amazed at how easy she made it look. Two ingredients.
I
didn't know. I didn't know. I had no idea how you make a truffle. So
you did.
Oh my God! Two ingredients. I could do this. So what I do? Went home. Well, went to the grocery store. Got some chocolate.
Good idea.
Got some heavy cream. Whipped up a ganache. Messed up the first time. Didn't chop up the chocolate.
But messed up ganache is still edible, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, you don't. You threw it away.
I did throw it away.
You're an idiot.
I threw it away.
What the hell's wrong with you? That's just like when Emma and I make creme brulee. We've never made creme brulee. We've made vanilla soup, and it's still good. Eat your mistakes, damn it.
At any rate, went back out to the grocery store because I'm that committed.
You sure are.
And, it was a success the second time around.
Very good. Although
it was kind of a success.
What?
Because they're still, I mean, you make the ganache, you roll them out, scoop them out into little balls, put them in the fridge, whatever. But then the second you take them out and try to roll them up in your hands, they melt and get sticky and goopy.
You don't have plastic gloves, do you?
No. But now, though, this for next time will be dipping them in another layer of chocolate to harden.
I see.
And then put in the fridge.
I see. And Elizabeth Garver is going to come and whack you off at the ankles.
And pictures... to be up next time this adventure happens on filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Yeah. That's...
Also, thecooldownshow.tumblr.com.
That's Kobe's Brazilian show on Saturday nights on EC2. I was on door detail. I was slapping hands, making sure they took one piece of candy. I'm that parent. And, you know, Mrs. Soci likes to have
Did a kid, like, try to reach for an Almond Joy and then see that it was coconut and, like, get away. And it's like, what the hell's the matter with you? Don't like coconut?
You know what? I try not to use words hell and damn at the door with the kids and other stronger words. But, I almost took off a fingernail today. No, I didn't. of course, Mrs. Soci likes to get chocolate and non-chocolate. And, of course, I want to give away all the non-chocolate, so the chocolate's stuck at the house. And then I get sitcom wife look. However, while Emma was out trick-or-treating, what movie did I watch while I was on door detail? The Night of the Hunter, which I highly, highly recommend. And occasionally, although I did not have Love and Hate scrawled on my hands, and occasionally when the door bell would ring, I would bellow, children. Nobody got it. I got it, and that's all that matters. And then we had as soon as she got home, we had the double feature, Sammy Terry double feature. Of course, Sammy was on the show last week. We watched the Uninvited with David Strathairn, Elizabeth Banks, and the girl from Lemony Snicket. And then a Svengoolie movie, which we had DVR'd, The Giant Mantis. Mm. Yes, about a giant frozen praying mantis that is thawed and runs roughshod. Roughshod?
What?
Roughshod.
Runs rampant?
Rashomon? It runs rampant, and it runs roughshod. You know what? It also swashes a buckle. So
buckles were swashed.
That's right. So that's what we did.
So, yeah, I caught a little bit of Sammy. It was cool until the movie started. But then that was the like it was like right in the beginning when the part where the girl's walking through the woods and then she encounters the bodies and the head just turns around.
Like, you're not you are not a scary movie.
Well, it was kind of like because like you knew something was gonna happen. And then there was like the audio kind of fades out real quiet, and then,
How'd that go again? Okay.
Just like that.
This is the Uninvited, this is with the combination of potentially wicked stepmother meshed in with, is she crazy or is she Memorex? You know, is it all in her head or is, you know, everybody out to get her? So anyway, that's out there. All right.
One second. Chris. Yes. What's your YouTube name? Because I'm looking for this and I cannot find it.
I think it's just Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Halloween,
yeah.
What was the most popular costumes that you saw manning the door?
Anybody involved with the Avengers?
Spider-Man.
I saw one or two. By far, ninjas.
Really?
It seemed like two-thirds of the boys and some small percentage of the
girls
were
ninjas. You know who officially made Batman uncool? Joe Shearer.
Yeah.
Kidding, Joe. Oh, but he has to talk like this.
Probably number two was princesses.
We have girls as princesses. Emma Wynn is
mermaids.
Yeah.
That was Bianca, right?
No, she was in class.
Okay. And you have no class.
Number three was probably surly teenagers.
Lazy surly teenagers that don't put on a costume.
Yeah.
I make them create stuff. What are you supposed to be as? You're not getting candy until you give me an answer. Eminem. All right, that's something. Here, get out of here.
Number four was the most surprising because I'd never seen it before. It was the caramel dad costume, which is the dad that's going around
sleeping
the chaperone.
With a nanny?
No. Wearing some sort of sports-themed coat, ball cap, and a plastic cup full of beer. Just, you know, wandering around with a hand in the pocket.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the caramel teacher costume, but we won't talk about it.
Might also include the cup of beer, for all we know.
Well, if you can want to say it. But nobody went as a caramel basketball team, right? Nobody had a broom handle.
Oh, no.
They did it. I'm sorry. Should we go back to the Penn State jokes? All right. I think we've had a nice warm up before starting new in theaters.
Tingly even.
All right, new in theaters this week. Boy, this is a monumental week because it's the return of the live action film work of one Robert Zemeckis. His last live action film was back in 2000.
Castaway.
Pre Emma. I remember this. Yeah, Castaway. And he's got a new film. It's R-rated, as we were reminded by some of the people at our screening the other night, called Flight. And it stars Denzel Washington as he's a tortured soul, as usually Denzel characters are. This time he's a pilot who has to make a daring emergency landing, which is very noble and makes him a hero. However, he did it after a night of boozing and drugging and not sleeping and not in the best shape. So he winds up doing that, and of course, he's first labeled a hero, and then his old habits start to come back to haunt him. So, of course, Lance Armstrong will never see this film.
Oh.
Hey, he deserves it, everything he gets.
Live wrong.
cheat strong.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, this is, like we said, this is Zemeckis' return to live action. And here's the thing about the film. And of course, he's surrounded by, it helps that you're surrounded by Don Cheadle, John Goodman, Bruce Greenwood. Yeah, Bruce Greenwood. Always good to see Bruce Greenwood. And a little Melissa Leo near the end. Robert Zemeckis, of course, gave us Forrest Gump and What Lies Beneath and Castaway. And there are moments where he's gonna tug at your heartstrings. He might even jerk a few tears out of you, Chris. But there are certain moments with Zemeckis films that it could be a deal breaker. Tom Hanks talking to a volleyball for an hour, or somebody as gorgeous as Robin Wright Penn having something for somebody like Forrest Gump.
Yeah,
you know, stories like this. And in this one, well, I'll get to it a little bit, but it broke the deal for me, and that's kind of a shame because Denzel Washington is really good in this. We've seen him play tortured souls, usually with Tony Scott, so it's a nice change of pace with somebody else, but he's got a little more depth to it.
Yeah, but usually he plays righteous torture souls.
And he's
people who, you know, are good in their heart, you know, like the
and flawed.
Like the Hurricane, you know, he's not a perfect guy, but he's in jail for a crime he didn't do. you know, in glory. He's, you know, a guy who, you know, is a slave looking to redeem himself. You know, it's usually the righteous guy. And here, he's not as righteous as he would like to think he is.
And, of course, that great opening scene with him and the stewardess and what he does to get ready for his... And apparently, if you sleep with a flight attendant, do a line of coke, hit a joint, have a beer, Joe Cocker music pops up immediately.
Yes. And more frontal nudity in a Robert Zemeckis movie than I've in the first few minutes than I've seen
ever
in all the others.
There's also, and of course, some people already compared the plane scenes in this film to Castaway. Now, full disclosure, I still get a little skittish on takeoffs and landings. I fly, but just a little. This film captures flight trauma very, very well. Zemeckis obviously knows his way around a camera, very technical director, especially when it comes to action sequences. The other thing is, this film equally seems like at times a PSA for AA and Budweiser, which I guess that's saying something.
Yeah.
But there's a moment, and quite often as a film critic, I often will give points for a film for what it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, it could have gone down this path, but it doesn't. But I'm going to be a jerk on this one because this movie did not end the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give it away, but there's a moment near the last third of the film that's reminiscent of the first scene of the film, and it involves John Goodman, and John Goodman's very funny in this.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, if they end it like this, it would be really... It would be cynical and dark and a little delicious for too delicious for my taste. No, it's not true. I would love it.
They went for the
but they couldn't do that. They absolutely couldn't do it.
They could have done it.
They could have, but people would be really turned off by it.
Well, see, I'm curious to see how, you know, mainstream audiences are going to take this movie because, you know, I think people are going to go into this looking for the Sully Sullenberger story, you know.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, the heroic pilot that does something, you know, but with a twist. Well, here it's... all the twists. And my understanding is the genesis of this film far preceded the Sully thing, the Sully heroic landing in the Potomac from, what was that, about 5-6 years ago?
Right.
You know, it starts off with maybe the first 30 minutes is with the plane crash and all that.
I believe
goes
so.
On like that. But, you know, really the heart of the movie is about this guy and his plight and, you know, how he fools others and how he fools himself and how he's been doing it for a long, long time.
Correct.
And it's a pretty dark path that he goes down, and I give Zemeckis and Washington great credit for drawing this character who is in many ways not likable.
No.
In a sense, he is heroic and yet unlikable at the same time.
Like Lance Armstrong.
You know, you spend the first half hour of the movie cheering for him, and then the last, you know, hour and a half really sort of being repulsed by a lot of things that he does. And I'm what you said about people, you know, having that moment where do you hitch your wagon to Zemeckis and go along with the movie or not? I don't know. I think he's going to lose some people there.
I probably. There's also, I have to mention, I'm mentioning and not mentioning this at the same time. There's a plot point that before the repeat of the beginning of the scene, it was one of the most convenient plot points in a movie. I compared it to the book fair scene where the three separate characters from the Clint Eastwood film Hereafter just so happened to run into each other, and they had to in order for the movie to continue on. But there's a thing involving a hotel room that it was just plopped there. Just plopped there for no other reason except they had to move the story along. And the problem was it clanged very loudly like a Shaq free throw. It was really, really bad. And there's and then we get the little tease away involving a particular item. I'm being vague about this, but yeah, I think there's enough twist that, yeah, it could turn some people off, but it's also the guy who directed Forrest Gump and Castaway, and it's gonna end what I think a lot of people are hoping it would.
Yeah, it's a powerful drama. I would still recommend it. You know, a lot of people are talking. It's getting a lot of great hype, like you know, Best Picture Oscar nominee.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not there for this movie.
Denzel, I'd say probably Washington might get Best Actor, and I think that's all it really deserves for the most part.
Yeah.
Some technical stuff.
Definitely a worthwhile movie, but not one you're going to be, at least in my opinion, walking out saying, like, I'm going to remember this one forever.
Right. So, Cobe, we have something over there?
Mm. Still, we don't have anything that's just kind of mediocre.
How about, it wasn't that great? You know, the actual words. Jerk.
Man,
What? Are you looking at Stephanie Powers still?
No, there's... I've got to organize this folder because there's so much crap in here.
Hey, that's
not
radio.
Crap. Good audio.
Radio gold right there. You got something?
Let's go with.
How neat is that? That's pretty neat.
Jeez. Also hosting the Oscars. No, that's Seth Green. Okay.
That's you want hosting the Oscars? Let's talk about that later.
Well, much later. Also opening in theaters today, which I think if I put the list of biggest surprises of the year, this film will make it. The animated feature Wreck-It Ralph. And it's a video game story. We have Wreck-It Ralph, who is an 80s video game villain voiced by John C. Reilly, who after 30 years is tired of being a bad guy. And, of course, it's not just the video game screen that he lives in. There is this whole kind of...
It's a video game world.
Monsters, Inc.-like world where, fictional, yeah. Fictitious video game characters and actual video game characters roam in one big area.
And this is a Disney animated computer
which
animated
I
film.
I did
not
know
but
until
not
I said that. Right.
But seems obviously very much influenced by Pixar. I think... thematically, the leap, it jumps off from kind of the same place as Toy Story in that, that our playthings are sentient and go along with us while we're there. But once we leave, they have a life of their own and they're not necessarily satisfied with it.
Kind of like your Tyler Head bobblehead doll, mm-hmm. Kobe. Mm-hmm. Tyler Hansborough bobblehead, sorry.
Tyler and Ben together again.
Yeah, we're happy. Yes. It's a great day for white basketball. Anyway, And it should be noted that the kids film correspondent Emma Sosi brought this up before I did to the nice lady that takes our comments. But she goes, Emma says, yeah, this is one of those villains tries to be a good guy film like Megamind and Despicable Me and Monsters, Inc. I went, yeah, it is. And I was concerned the first half hour for me. I was kind of dreading because, except for the short at the beginning, which is really, really sweet.
Yeah.
But anytime I hear popular music in a film like this, especially when video game characters are dancing to Celebration by Kool and the Gang, which is for me low-hanging fruit and really easy, and I'm like, give me something else. Once it gets past that, and also the fact that we see, some cameos by stuff we grew up with, Sonic and Q-Bert, which was a favorite
Pac-Man.
Of mine, Pac-Man, the Ghost, and yes, I remember one scene, and people will rent this, so they could rent it and pause it and look at all the video games that they recognize, but one that made me laugh out loud was this giant, it looks like a giant train, area waiting, train station, and off to the lower right-hand corner, there's Pong.
Yeah.
Two little rectangles and a square. So, obviously, the writers and director of this, and of course, the producers worked on some Pixar films. They really know their video games.
Yeah, specifically, and it's supposed to be it's set in modern times. So, they're an antiquated video game,
right?
And I like that. The worst thing that can happen in their world is to get slapped with an out of order sign. That's the indication that you're going to be wheeled out of the arcade and thus life will end. Something interesting of the metaphysics behind this movie is, the idea is that every video game in the entire store is plugged into one massive circuit breaker.
Yeah.
And they travel through the electrical line and the circuit breaker itself is the central hub there. And then they can go into other video games if they want and so forth.
But see, so wish you would rent The Cell and Lawnmower Man while we're at it.
But I would argue that in this movie that existence it only happens in that particular arcade. That it's not happening in every arcade.
So we can't go
arcade.
The one on the north side of town.
Right. It's not like every video game in every video game character in every game everywhere is alive and sentient. It's just that in this particular situation, it's magic. And that's why, getting the out-of-order sign and leaving
is bad.
Is death.
Right.
Because it also means, obviously, 98% of the video games that are played nowadays are played at home, on home systems, on home computers,
and
or on mobile devices.
And they should be voiced by Jane Lynch.
They should all be voiced by Jane Lynch.
Adds to the wonderful. John C. Reilly's a voice on this. Sarah Silverman is the little girl who winds up becoming a begrudging sidekick to Wreck-It Ralph. And she is known as a glitch. And what's interesting watching this is she's one of those because she's a fairly old video game is that when there's a little circuit fuzz or blip in her, and you could put that for any behavioral or social class thing
yeah.
that you that kids are shunned upon by other kids, whether it is learning or appearance.
Different.
Or,
you're different.
Just you're just different. And it's interesting that my daughter's introductions to Sarah Silverman have been House of or School of Rock and this film. I can never show her Jesus' Magic, at least not yet.
Yes.
So they're involved, and yeah, Jane Lynch is kind of the Lara Croft on roids, not like Lance Armstrong roids, character who's...
Second Lance Armstrong joke this show.
He's just a piece of anything. Who's also trying to help out, because there's also this big master plan about taking over the entire video game world. I mean, it's very, very smart.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. It kind of operates on a single level. It's trying to entertain you. There's a little bit of life lessons in there, but not too much.
I need to learn some lessons.
It's not like the Pixar movies. It's not like an ambitious movie. They're not trying to make art here. They're trying to make a very well-crafted piece of entertainment for children, and I think they've done it. And the fact that, you know, as a grown up, I was not bored at it.
No. And it didn't feel like it was, we were looked down upon while watching it.
Yes. And we should mention that, for the first time ever, I have a little personal story here.
This is great.
I brought my own entrant to the Junior Film Critics Club.
The IFJA Junior Squad.
Yes. Which I guess he would be the fifth member? Is that right?
Well, we should forget, I don't know if we should mention it, but I think Donnie's a part of that group. He's obviously emeritus, alumni emeritus.
Alumni emeritus, yeah.
So, but there was, yeah, this was the first.
Brought my two-year-old. Two-year-old. First time I've ever attempted. I should say, I had brought him to some earlier screenings.
Which was fun for another time. But
when he was literally a little babe and, you know, slept through most of it or cried through most of it. Yeah.
Right.
So an actual thing. And he watched the whole thing, was completely engaged. Sat through the whole thing, clapped and cheered, and he made the sign, you know, the hand sign for more as the end credits were rolling. So based on that demographic, it was a hit.
And did you have to explain to him it opens Friday and we can't? And...
No, well, he had just gotten to the point where he can watch a whole movie on video at home.
Congratulations.
And so, that... yeah, the magic has begun.
From a parent standpoint, I've been there, but it's kind of like when the child can sit up by themselves for even just a few seconds.
Yeah.
So you can get a little bit of relief. You can exhale a little bit. But yeah, so we had your son, Joe's three kids.
Yep.
And of course, kids film correspondent Emma was there. Emma, of course, wants to be the ringleader. She wants to be the
Madam President.
She wants the Lee Marvin of IFJA Junior. So, but you know, I think it was a wise choice to bring him because it's wall-to-wall colors and sound.
Yeah.
You know, we often complain about, this movie's like a video game, and this one is a film about video games, so it's okay.
We should mention the two games that Ralph ends up, you know, infiltrating. What was the first one? It's like something like you know, Hall of Duty or Honor of Duty,
yes,
like very generic name.
Yeah, one of the things probably Kobe's roommates in
first person shooter games.
Quite a bit. Yeah, one of the guys down the hall that spent all night not studying to play. Yeah,
dude, get online.
I wish it was paused so I could blow up some more stuff.
But yeah,
pause it.
They spent most of the movie actually ends up in the racing game called Sugar Rush, girls' game where everything, all the racers are girls.
It's like Strawberry Shortcake and Pole Position had a child.
Yeah, everything's made out of candy or cups like this. And also they have the king or the emperor or whatever he is of Sugar Rush, voiced by, I think, is it Alan Tudyk?
He
did some wonderful voice work
There's
in
some
this.
Really good voice work in this. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. Go check it out. You got a thing there?
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, there you go. And just a few hours ago, I just returned from, and I love when my piles of DVDs come into play and my DVD world and my film world collide. I also got to see the film, we don't get to say this too often, starring, directed by, and co-written by the RZA, for you fans of Wu-Tang Clan.
Wu-Tang!
Can't say anymore, but it's called The Man with the Iron Fist, and this is a Quentin Tarantino Presents production, so I don't know if that means he put any money down or if he just says he liked it.
I think it.
It
means he got a paycheck to put his name on it,
right.
Yeah.
So, and it's a martial arts film, and it's funny because I just finished watching the DVD, The 36th Chamber of Shaolin, which features a commentary by the RZA for you fans of Dragon Dynasty DVDs. It's a Shaw Brothers classic production from the 70s. But in this one, you have the RZA, who is a blacksmith, And you have Russell Crowe, who's an English gentleman, soldier, fighter. It looks like for hire. I got Oliver Reed flashbacks watching him in this one. And, of course, you have the obligatory warring groups. There's a hyena group, and there's a lion group. And then there's a bordello run by Lucy Liu, which is great for all sorts of reasons. And they all clash upon one another, involving a fortune in gold. And the RZA knows his martial arts films. The film is also the other co-writer, Eli Roth, who is also a producer on this film. So as far as knowledge of over-the-top martial art films from the 70s and 80s, which I watched way too much as a kid on TV. Thank you, independent syndicated television. So there's the over-the-top action stuff. It's funny with Lucy Liu in the bordello, you might get some flashbacks to Kill Bill Volume 1. It is really bloody. It is really bloody. The action scenes vary from different styles. So if you're a basement dweller martial arts fan, hello, you'll be able to recognize these. And of course, there's music by the RZA. Why not?
Of course.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And yes, Kobe, Pam Grier plays the RZA's mom.
Awesome.
Take that for what it's.
Now that was a good movie.
It is, and it's a step above. I know Grindhouse and Machete were not your favorites, Chris. I think it's a step above that, where it's not entirely winking at the audience, going, "Look how cool we are." But the knowledge of this particular genre is there, and it's a lot of, for me, it was a lot of fun, bloody
cool.
Fun. So,
yeah.
All right, we are going to take a break, and we're going to talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Sir.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Hey, everyone, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis.
It just never gets old.
No.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter at Matthew Soci. Christopher Lloyd from the Film Yap is here hanging out with Kobe Slagle and myself. I forgot to mention there is one film that opened last week and it's still in theaters. I'm glad it is. It's the Scandinavian drama Simon and the Oaks, which stars Bill Skarsgård, son of Stellan Skarsgård, one of our favorite Euro that guys. He's the villain in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the remake, I should say, and countless others. But it's a working class family in Denmark in 1939, right at the rise of Hitler and the beginning of World War II.
Wonderful little movie, probably one of the best foreign language films I've seen this year.
Yeah, and it's just when we thought, and it's not a Scandinavian version of Hope and Glory. But it is a coming of age story in a really, really difficult time. And yes, there is actually a connection with the title, with the said name and the said trees.
Yeah.
But he doesn't talk to the trees because that's from Paint Your Wagon. but no, nice little picture. Definitely worth checking out. Well, it's kind of a light week for new DVD Blu-ray titles. However, there are two of note. One is, and I can't remember if the original, if the film Theatrical Relief, I want to say it was during the May primaries, probably wasn't, but it was the political comedy, The Campaign,
yes,
with Zach Galifianakis and Will Ferrell. How appropriate that it comes out the week before Election Day.
I think someone might have had some planning on
I
that.
Think so. But we have, of course, these two guys play politicians. This time, Will Ferrell is the Democrat who's run unopposed for 4 years in North Carolina, and got a little he has little Clinton habits about him from time to time.
Yeah.
And some very powerful bigwigs played by Dan Aykroyd and John Lithgow decide to finance a dupe. It would almost say Hudsucker proxy, if you will, in the form of Zach Galifianakis, a Republican who he's got to stop playing prissy roles where people where he's walking dogs all over town. He's got to come up with something new.
Yeah. Seen a lot of that.
Yeah. So this is and of course they start start butting heads in all sorts of shapes and forms. Watching this film, I chuckled out loud. I don't think I really laughed. And part of it was...
What's an out loud chuckle sound like?
I'm not going to do it for you because I'm not a trained SEAL. Mm. How do you like that? but it's amusing to see how far these politicians will go to get your vote or to make the other look bad.
Yeah, up to and including using a sex tape as a campaign ad.
With a spouse of your opponent. And then another opponent gets shot.
Yeah.
Those are fun. It helps with both of these guys because we've seen this. I mean, Will Ferrell's kind of done. This politician is slightly smarter than the George W. Bush imitation that Ferrell has done on Broadway and in other movies. And of course, Galifianakis, we've talked about those. But it also helps that this film has what we like to call in our world. The film has a deep bench with John Lithgow, Dan Aykroyd. You also Dylan McDermott. Nice to see Dylan McDermott in a comedy. He plays a guy who's hired by the Republican Party to zip up Galifianakis' image.
Yeah.
In the party. Was it Jason Sudeikis? Am I saying that right? Who plays Farrell's campaign manager?
Yeah.
So there's some funny people, and they all get to do some funny bits from time to time, so it's not the entire weight is not all on the shoulders of Ferrell and Galifianakis. It's almost like Jordan in the early years where, you know, he would score 30 or 40 and then they'd still lose by 15. So
yeah.
Slightly better than that, but not quite winning a ring or a title at the time.
Not Anchorman quality is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Decently fun, but pretty forgettable.
Yes. So now something that's not forgettable, well, and Chris, you want to make sure it's not forgettable, is the film Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah, a little independent film came out around that same time, wasn't it? Like early summer, late spring, somewhere in there.
I think so.
And I think, you know, got an okay audience for a little independent movie that it was, but, you know, did not really break through. And I'm hoping people will give it a chance. Very hard to describe movie. The basic.
You got 23 minutes, so go ahead.
The basic setup is that three journalists from a Seattle magazine are sent to explore this help wanted ad. They said I need an assistant to help me travel through time. I've only done this once before. Safety not guaranteed. And so they go basically say, like, who, you know, the story would be, who is the sort of guy who would be behind an ad like that? And they end up finding him, and he's this guy played by Mark Duplass, who is indeed strange and off kilter, but not scary and not hateful or anything like that. And
so he's Kobe.
And the Aubrey Plaza, you probably know her as the girl on the Parks and Recreation,
right?
Is the lead in this movie. And I've been sort of saying for years, I would love to see her get a lead role in a movie to see what she can do with it. And she just nails it. And she's sort of a burned out post-college graduate. And she is sort of sent out as the bait for this guy. And they end up sort of having a little bit of an interaction that becomes something a little more. And such a hard movie to describe. And I am not going to tell you if there is actually time travel involved in the movie, because that's like sort of the setting for the movie, but it's not really what it's about. I mean, what would you even describe it? Is it a romantic movie? Is it a black comedy? Is it a drama? I don't know. It's very
quirky.
It's quirky, but
without Zoe Deschanel.
It's quirky, but it's not insistently quirky by like Moonrise Kingdom, which came out around the same time.
You're the only one in this group who doesn't like.
Still don't like Moonrise Kingdom, where, you know. In Moonrise Kingdom, you get the sense that people are weird because they're performing for their audience, whether it's the camera or the other characters around them. Like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I want to be seen as weird and different from you, whereas the characters in this movie, you know, there's this you know, alien nature to the Mark Duplass character, but it sort of comes out from inside rather than because he's trying to, you know, impress you with his weirdness.
Hi, I'm Matthew Soucy.
Safety Not Guaranteed, the best movie you probably didn't see this year.
That's very good. So that is also out. Okay, we have some old titles. Wow. I think they're a little late coming to the party on this one, but that's okay because the party was pretty lousy. But there are two Blu-rays. One is House of Dark Shadows and Night of Dark Shadows. Mm. And these are based on the original series, not that abomination that Tim Burton put out earlier this year. So if you want to check that out, Kobe, I thought of you. It's out on Criterion, and I bought it today. Oh, by the way, in the shameless plug, and I'm not getting any money for this, right now at Barnes & Noble, they are in their 50% off Criterion and Art House titles.
Wow.
So I picked up Rosemary's Baby.
Wow.
Roman Polanski's fun film about Mia Farrow giving birth to the devil. And an Academy Award for Ruth Gordon, and it's William Castle produced this film, who he really wanted to direct it, and then was kind of bitter that he didn't, and then he saw the film and went, no, actually, Roman Polanski did a really good job. So
yep. I should head over there and stock up so I can have an even taller pile of videos that I don't have time to watch.
Well, you know what? It's there for you in case you break a leg or get pneumonia.
Yeah, I will make time for one that we were mentioning on social media the other day. Got it just the other day, the remastered Blu-ray of Lawrence of Arabia.
That's a day right there.
That's a day right there.
Absolutely. So can't wait. Cannot wait to show that to the Kids Film Correspondent.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. So that's out. Also, oh boy, this is something they won't send us. It's too bad because it's really huge and it's really cool. Alfred Hitchcock, the Masterpiece Collection. This is in one collection, ladies and gentlemen. Saboteur, Shadow of a Doubt, Rope, Rear Window, Trouble with Harry, The Man Who Knew Too Much, the Jimmy Stewart version, Trouble with Harry. Oh, I already mentioned that. Vertigo, sorry.
More Trouble with Harry.
Still Trouble with Harry.
There's two sequels right there. North by Northwest, Psycho, The Birds, Marnie, Torn Curtain, Topaz, Frenzy, and Family Plot. 15 Universal films by Alfred Hitchcock. That's a month
awesome.
Right there. That's... Well, some more awesome than others, and, well, then there's the late 60s.
Yeah.
So, as we were talking about earlier, because we got to see Hitchcock, but we can't talk about it. Moving on. So, how many of these do you own? Do you own any of these on Blu-ray already?
Go through the list again.
Saboteur?
Nope.
Not on Blu-ray, but I own it. Actually, I own all these, but not on Blu-ray. Shadow of a Doubt?
Actually, I'm not sure if I own any of these. Keep going.
Wow.
Just do
Shadow of a
quickly.
Doubt.
No.
Rope?
Nope.
Rear Window?
Not on Blu-ray, though.
Okay. Trouble with Harry.
Nope.
More Trouble with Harry.
Nope.
Even more Trouble with Harry.
I know what
Nobody
you did last
that.
Summer with Harry.
I know. Man Who Knew Too Much.
Nope.
Vertigo.
Yes.
North by Northwest.
Yes.
Psycho.
No.
The Birds.
No.
Marnie.
No.
Your favorite.
No.
That's Torn Curtain.
Marnie.
No, and Marnie. So,
and Marnie.
Topaz.
No.
Frenzy.
No. I don't own anything past North by Northwest.
Oh, wow. It's funny because Family Plot was I remember seeing that in theaters. There's only been two Hitchcock films I got to see in the theater. One was Family Plot in Roscommon, Michigan, 1976. And then in the mid-90s when they re-released Vertigo. So that's a collection right there. Kobe, have you seen those?
Did I
make you watch Rope?
Yeah, I saw
And you
Rope,
watched Psycho.
Psycho.
And you're
Birds,
fine.
Rear Window.
Okay.
Haven't seen Vertigo.
Okay.
Haven't seen North by Northwest.
We've got to work on that. We'll see. Also out on Blu-ray, and this is not only it's another piece of awesomeness from director Sidney Lumet, but I think it has for me my favorite Katharine Hepburn performance, and that's the film version of Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night with Katharine Hepburn, Ralph Richardson, Dean Stockwell, and Jason Robards. This is 1962, an O'Neill-like family. So it's long, and as my wife calls it, Long Day's Journey into Tedium, I disagree, where we have the two misfit brothers and the bombastic actor father and the domineering mother who happens to be a morphine addict. And you get young Katharine Hepburn and old Katharine Hepburn in the same performance, depending on her state of mind. So I think it's a solid 3-hour drama, and I think we'll do this for next week's show. Sorry, Jeff. Because of Cloud Atlas last week, which is still going on, but it's not quite 3 hours. But Jeff Marker and I from the Film Critic down in Gainesville, but we talked about excellent two-hour films. The problem is it's 3 hours.
Oh boy,
there's plenty of those. So we'll play that on next week's show. But however, Long Day's Journey and Tonight, I believe, is 3 hours, and it's excellent as 3 hours. So that's worth checking out. And finally, I don't know why it's out this week, but it's, I guess, the week after Halloween, and it's too close to have. But do you really need a Blu-ray of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians? The film debut of Pia Zadora, one of the favorite films I enjoy watching during Christmas. Just
it just doesn't look good enough on DVD.
It needs more clarity on Blu-ray.
You need 1080p.
So that is there. So, all right. We're going to go to the archives a little bit. Of course, Into the Archives is when certain studios, like Warner Brothers in this case, put out movies that you can't buy in stores. You have to go order them online, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
We know those kids in school. They had the technology. That was cracking new at that time.
Yes.
And this is another example of the DVD piles start to come into play with stuff that has already happened on the show. Kobe's already looking. Yes, it's a blaxploitation film. On last week's Dead People We Like, and by the way, thank you, Chris. Do you have the intro, Kobe, if you're not too busy not looking at...
I got sidetracked by
the cover of the movie.
On the cover, Warner Brothers Archive Collection, on top of the picture, from MGM, the company that gave you Shaft.
Yes, yes. So we'll talk to that in a little bit. But I do, of course, anytime my guests are in that has contributed to the film show, we like to throw it back at their face. Or, share it with them. So because of last week's installment of...
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Yes.
Okay. On last week's installment of Dead People We Like was kind of that guy actor, Wally Taylor. Mm. Now, Wally Taylor, doesn't quite come to mind, so you're going. And he did a lot of TV, a lot of movies, and a lot of theater. He was a James Earl Jones' understudy in the Broadway run of The Great White Hope. Mm. Also was in a production of Fences. Played a lot of lieutenants. And films of that kind of TV kind. But probably his most high-profile role, even though it wasn't his largest role, he was Clubber Lang's trainer in Rocky III.
Wow.
See, there's your little point of reference. So, well, and it just so happens, as I was going through his IMDb file, one of the films he appeared in was on the Into the Archive list in my living room. And it's the 1972 crime drama called Cool Breeze. And it stars Thalmas Razulala and is directed and written by Barry Pollock. And it's basically a crime heist film. And what's funny is whenever you see a DVD case, they try to compare it to other films. And in this one, the back of the case on Warner Brothers DVD says... Go ahead.
Great review here from Roger Ebert. Good scenes that breathe and have you caring.
He won a Pulitzer for that. That might have been what got him the Pulitzer. In this case, they refer to it as an uptown remake of The Asphalt Jungle. Well, and usually, well, Asphalt Jungle is a Warner Brothers movie, so I'm like, of course, the Warner Brothers film, they're going to make reference to that. It's like the Bernie Casey film Hitman was referred to as a kind of a ghetto version of Get Carter. Mm. Well, as it turns out, this film is based on the novel by W.R. Burnett, who wrote the novel The Asphalt Jungle.
Wow.
So it's not just... we're going to take an old title that people will know and slap it on here. So it's a jewel heist. Thalmas gets out of jail. And by the way, he's got a strut that I think Sherman Helmsley ripped off a couple years later. I'll just say that. And so they get some various people to set up the job. You have Raymond St. Jacques playing the guy who with the money who's going to help finance the jewel heist. And, of course, as it turns out, he's got troubles of his own, and he's going to wind up screwing everybody. Not literally, but Wally Taylor plays the guy who runs the diner. His younger brother is the muscle, and he drives the getaway bus. Mm. So good for Wally Taylor on this. But it's produced by Gene Corman, who wound up doing some notable films like the Sylvester Stallone union film Fist.
Oh,
that one, it's so not based on Jimmy Hoffa. He also was an executive producer on The Big Red One.
Wow.
Worked on A Woman Called Golda. did the action film You Can't Win 'Em All, which teamed up Charles Bronson and Tony Curtis, but also did some Jim Brown films that I actually own, I Escaped Devil's Island, The Slams, which I think I'll watch on for next week's Into the Archives, the Bernie Casey film, which I already talked about, Hitman, Darktown Strutters, Ski Party, and Beach Ball, not with Jim Brown or Bernie Casey. That would have been really cool. But, I mean, it's a good solid 90-minute, you know, afternoon crime film with a really cool score by Solomon Burke and lots of familiar faces. In fact, there is one, Mr. Slagle, Pamela Greer, as she is listed. She's got one scene, and she is she's a gift, I guess I should say, for a job well done. So you can even befuddle Fair Sweet Bianca even more by watching this film.
I think I'm just going to have to cave and go out and buy Jackie Brown on Blu-ray, because I see it every time I see it in stores. I see it. I was like, oh, man, I need to get that. And I never do. And
because
I think
are you waiting for the Uber Colossal?
No, it's not even that. I maybe I'm waiting on a deal. I don't know. But that's what it's going to have to be, because that Jackie Brown is unbelievable.
Well, it is Quentin Tarantino's best film, in my opinion. But it happened last week that Fair Sweet Bianca says, oh, that's right, you both like Pam Grier. I don't get that. You gotta correct her on that, sir. Especially after she made you watch The Skeleton Key. I think you owe her. But there's – so he's in this. Frank McRae, everybody's favorite yelly, screamy police officer from 48 Hours and The Last Action Hero. That guy, he's in it as well. Margaret Avery, long before she got an Oscar nomination for The Color Purple, she's in this film as well. So, yeah, this is fun. It's good for your collection. I think so, because I bought it. So why not? And so next week we'll talk about The Slams, which is Jim Brown in prison, and it's also a film that features – Ted Cassidy.
It's also an art film.
I wish. Because then it would be 50% off at Barnes & Noble. Okay. I guess in other film news while we have some time, and I wrote about this on earlier in the week when it happened. Of course, George Lucas is as if he wasn't a billionaire already. He sold everything for what? $4.05 billion, ladies and gentlemen. So Disney now owns George Lucas's work. And as you can tell, everybody who loves doing Photoshop is having fun with all the cartoons that are on Facebook. I've written this a couple of times, and I try to word this carefully. I've never felt like my cultural childhood has been raped or violated. Those words have been used online.
Me neither.
Get over it.
Yeah.
So you're not – you don't have to go see – and, of course, it was announced that there's going to be episode 7, 8, and 9.
And then a new Star Wars movies every 3 or 4 years thereafter.
Okay. Ladies
that's
and gentlemen.
That's official? They are going to do 7
well,
and 9?
Well, it's official, but, again – until I see a poster or a trailer, I don't really care.
Yeah.
But, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to go see these films. Nobody dragged you out of your basement to go see episodes 1 through 3 with the Clockwork Orange eyelid clamps. You don't have to see these. If you want to take your VHS copies of Star Wars or the DVDs that don't have Hayden Christensen and the original ones where Han shot first, and you want to lock them up in your parents' basements, do so.
Yeah.
But don't blather on. The guy is now, you know, I think he had a pillowcase filled with cash, and now he has. Well, he has a whole room filled with cash. So yeah. You don't have to go see it. If you want to keep your little Star Wars world the way it is, that's fine.
Can I keep my Star Wars guys?
Yes. You could do God knows whatever you do with them.
I mean,
in and out of the box.
I feel about this just the way I'll feel about
it's
the
collectible.
I'll feel about the individual movies when they come out. You know, if they're good, they're good. And if they're not, they're not. I mean, you know, there's this whole universe that has been created, you know, just like with, you know, the Tolkien movies and with, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek, you know, how many Star Trek movies and how many Star Trek series. And I mean, there's infinite stories out there to be done. I mean, there are, gosh knows, dozens and dozens of Star Wars novels that, you know, tied in.
Oh, yeah. Animated series now?
Yeah, animated series now. And, you know, I've already heard, like, Kevin Smith talking about he'd like to go back and make a movie about, you know, Chewie and Han before they got caught up with the Rebellion, you know, young Han and Chewie.
When they were gay. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I'd like to see that, you know. So I've actually read, you know, from my childhood some of those books, you know. I would love to see the movie version of Lando Calrissian and the Star Cave of Thon Baka.
That would be Cool Breeze with Billy Dee Williams. So
yeah, so I'm cool with it. You know, if they make movies and they're good, great. If they're not, then we'll write funny, bad reviews of them.
We'll let you know about it. Look, it also helps that I'm married and I have a child around the house and two cats. But I don't have time to get my knickers in a twist when a film from the 70s or 80s is being remade, or a film that should be deemed unremakeable was remade. I got my dander slightly up when Straw Dogs was being made because I was more of a Peckinpah guy than a Lucas guy. But you know what? Film was bad and I moved on.
And as I like to point out, there are parts of the first trilogy that are cheesy and hokey.
I want to go into town against the Starfleet converters.
I mean, there are some lines of dialogue and the way they're delivered that are so, I mean.
You're talking about episodes 1 through 3?
No.
Four through three.
Star Wars, we don't do episodes here,
four through
son.
Six. Okay.
No. Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Anybody who wants to talk about how awful Jar Jar Binks was, I say, you know, put in A New Hope and listen to, you know, when he says, I only wish Ben was here.
You mean the rat? The song that Michael Jackson sang?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the record, I don't care what anyone says, I like episodes 1 through 3. No, they're not as good as 4 through 6, but they're still fun sci-fi.
I remember saying, because I had to review this on Fox, 2 was okay. Three are
really?
One was okay, except Jar Jar Binks was really, really bad, and Jake Lloyd was irritating, and of course Jake Lloyd will tell you his life is living hell now because he's doing all this. I remember episode 2 was funny because it felt like a Raymond Chandler novel. It was like a detective story because there was lots of going in the space diners and trying to get information. And then episode 3, yeah, he drops to his knees and screams no, and it turns into like Space Othello, only it's with Hayden Christensen and not James Earl Jones. So but yeah, that we saw them and we critiqued them and then we moved on. My gosh, they're only this
move
is
along.
A, yeah, this is a
move
film
along.
Critic saying this. It's just a movie, folks. Move along. Now we're gonna move on to the Film Yap, and what's going on over at the Film Yap?
Just wrapping up is Nick Rogers' very ambitious series.
Yeah, Nick, way to go, man.
It's called You Only Live 20 Thrice. And it's his wrap up of. Every week for the last months, he's been taking each James Bond movie in order and writing very deep,
detailed
investigations of these movies. And he's going to be handling the main review of Skyfall next week when it comes out.
Which we saw this week and you didn't deal with it. We love our jobs from time to time.
And also, next week will be his last in the series, where he's going to look at the as he puts it, the bastard child of, children of Bond, Casino Royale, the David Niven.
The 1960 version, and Never Say Never Again?
And Never Say Never, Never, Never Again.
There you go. Kobe, do we have a return of...
What did we see?
Wait a minute. Do you have an archive? Do you have an old movie that you talk about as well?
Billy Budd.
Terrence
Stamp's first film.
The awesomeness that is Terrence Stamp.
Yes, and a very underrated film. I believe directed and co-written by Peter, and also co-starring Peter Ustinov. Only got nominated for one Academy Award for Terrence Stamp. I really thought it should have been a Best Picture nominee.
1962. That was a rough year. That was Lawrence of Arabia and To Kill a Mockingbird, and then
Mutiny on the Bounty.
Mutiny on the Bounty. Yeah. So
speaking of which, the ship that they built for that movie and was used in Pirates of the Caribbean and a bunch of other films, unfortunately, was a victim of Hurricane Sandy.
I think as dead vessels we like. Oh. So, so Kobe, do we have a what is Kobe watching without the intro? Or
okay.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Well,
Cloud Atlas.
You saw it?
Yep.
Wow.
Did you get it?
Yeah. There's not really anything to get. I mean, you can try to draw conclusions between all the stories, but I mean,
it helps if you shut your brain off on that.
Yeah, they don't really. I wouldn't say they really connect to each other as it's. The whole movie, I mean, it's what it's getting at is that life is a, and time is a continuation.
And Tom and Hallie get to do fun things. Yeah, I think if you, I stopped halfway through that film, I stopped trying to connect the pieces and just tried to enjoy them for what they were. And they were six, seven different short films that were pretty good in various degrees.
What I've taken from that is everybody who's read the book says you have to read the book.
We don't, but this isn't book sociology, so so take that, people.
When can I guest on that show?
When we get more pledge money for HD2. All right, here's some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go check out thefilmyapp.com. Chris, thank you so much.
Pleasure is mine.
And yours, too. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go Wizzo All-Stars and the Pistons and the Lions, because the World Series is over. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Into the woods this weekend at Earlham. I love you, Lynn. Break a leg.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers.